You paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Wintrust Business Lunch. Jason Turner joins us, Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Wintrustwealth.com. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
I don't even know where to start these days. Do you want to talk about the markets maybe just out of the gate a little bit? What are we seeing? A little bit of a correction in the last couple of days. The Fed had an announcement. Where are we right now?
Yeah, you're right. The markets did get into correction territory last week. The S&P 500 briefly at one point was down 10% peak to trough. So that defines correction territory for us. But since then, we have seen the markets reverse course and trade up. We got a nice little mini rally after Chair Powell's comments yesterday that tried to continue into this morning and then is lost steam as we move into the middle of the trading day. I think what's happening here is the markets are trying to find some stability, some level of stabilization. It's a natural pattern for markets when they correct. We get a period of stabilization, and then we start to move back higher. Very rarely do you get kind of this V-shaped significant bounce.
It's interesting because the markets did seem to have a favorable reaction to it. They didn't do anything with interest rates. They said they might drop it two more times in the coming year, but they also said that inflation is a concern, and they put that squarely on the feet of Donald Trump's trade policies, right?
That's correct. Chair Powell tied inflation explicitly to tariffs and mentioned that the Fed believes this to be a transitory inflation shock. And that's a trigger word for me. John, you know this. It's a trigger word for me, given the use by Chair Powell of the word transitory when the inflation spike first started happening back in 2022.
I was surprised to hear him say that. We kind of laughed about that. I said, dude, you need a thesaurus. Do not say temporary. Say kind of here for a while, but we're not sure. Say whatever you want, but don't say transitory.
Yeah, anything other than transitory would be okay.
So what about that, though? I mean, if the president is locked in on his tariff policies and here comes April, I wonder what that means going forward.
Well, I think we still need more clarity on what those tariffs are going to actually look like as fully implemented. We've got some, but we've also got a lot of threats and speculation out there, too. And that Chair Powell pointed to in his comments yesterday as well, that there is an enormous amount of uncertainty in financial markets today. And a lot of this driven because we don't have clarity on what trade policy is going to be.
And the president is trying to bully the chairman into lowering interest rates. I'm using the word bully because I don't have my thesaurus with me, but it seems like the private sector and agencies of government are all bowing to Donald Trump's wishes, and the chairman has not done that yet, right?
The chairman has been pretty clear that he takes very seriously the Fed's independence from the political process and tries to make the right decision for the economy. The president has been very quiet up until the last 24 hours about the Fed this term. Now, he was not during his first term, and I think we're finally seeing that come back around to the treatment he delivered to the Fed the first time around. And there's certainly some disagreement between the White House and the Fed chairman on what the right monetary policy is on a short-term basis.
The president wants interest rates lowered. He thinks that'll jumpstart the economy, maybe the housing industry. What's your take on all of that?
More directly, I think the president's desire to have the Fed continue the cutting path that started late last year is tied directly to tariffs. It's to soften the blow from tariffs and to get a little bit more money in Americans' pockets, thereby maybe softening some of that blow from an economic slowdown perspective. But we have to remember the other side of tariffs. They create inflation on their own. Lower rates would also spur inflation, and the Fed is trying to adhere to its dual mandate of stable prices and full employment.
Do you think the administration would give them that? Would our Treasury Secretary say, okay, I'll make that trade? Do they agree that it would be inflationary if the Fed lowered the interest rate?
I don't necessarily want to speak for the Treasury Secretary or the Treasury Department in that regard. It's tough to say whether they would believe it or not. The economic facts are pretty clear, though.
Yeah.
Tariffs will create higher inflation. Lower rates create higher inflation.
Anything else you want to maybe point out to us today? There are jobless claims. There's U.S. home sales that are up a little bit more in February. What else is on your mind?
Yeah, I've been watching the jobless side of the equation. I think when we talked last year, we talked a lot about the Fed pivoting from a focus on inflation to employment markets. They've clearly pivoted back to inflation as their guiding principle for making policy decisions. But we do have to keep an eye on employment markets. Unemployment rate crept up to 4.1%. That is not concerning at all. That's about average for where we want the unemployment rate. However, that does not include any of the DOGE-related layoffs from the federal government. We likely won't see the first of those until the March report that comes out in April. Yeah. So we're likely to see a little more pain in the employment markets. That has me a little cautious. And the continuing resolution to keep the government working through September is a good thing, but we still don't have resolution on when tax policy or if tax policy will change. We likely don't get that until September. So a lot of unknowns, which is going to create some volatility for us in markets.
On those numbers, the Treasury Secretary said maybe they'll separate out government and private sector. We'll have to aggregate them or find a way to make apples compare to apples. But Steve Alexander mentioned as much a little while ago that we won't see these layoff numbers until the next report or two. Do you think they will be significant? That is, I don't really believe all of the numbers that are coming out because I don't think they know. I mean, we've seen on the DOGE website that there's a lot of misinformation. They don't understand the machinations of government. They're trying to do good, but they don't know what they're doing. And I wonder if we even know how many people have actually been laid off. Do you know what I mean?
I think we'll get that some of that clarity in April because we have very accepted ways for measuring unemployment. It's those folks that are actually, you know, seeking employment, that are unemployed, that are able to work. So that criteria is laid out in the way those jobs numbers are reported. We just won't see those reported until April. And that 1 month lag is going to start to teach us something. And as you correctly pointed out, that's not the end of it. You'll get some in March. You'll get some more in April. There are folks that have been laid off from a federal government position that have not necessarily gone and looked for a new job because they know somebody else that got an email 3 days later that sent them back to work in their old job.
Yeah, how about that?
That uncertainty creates issues with the numbers and the reporting.
And Jason, but you do think those will be noticeable numbers, that they will be large numbers?
I do think they're going to be noticeable numbers, whether they rise to what I would call large numbers or recession-like numbers of layoffs. I don't think we necessarily get there in a one-month report.
Yeah.
But if we look back 2-3 months from now and look at just the government side of the ledger, I think we'll see some fairly large numbers.
Jason Turner is the Chief Investment Strategist at Wintrust Wealth Management. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, John.
Bree Fowler is a regular guest on the Wintrust Business Lunch. She's a senior writer over at CNET.com. Hi, Bree. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
New phones on the horizon here. What do I need to know?
Yeah, the latest offering comes from Google's Pixel 9. It is the Pixel 9a, and it is aimed at people who want a quality phone, but they're on a budget.
What kind of price does this come in at?
This is what people are calling the sweet spot of $500. You know, it's not the super, super cheap, you know, very limited function kind of phones that you'll pay a couple $100 for, but it's still cheaper than Apple's cheapest offering.
Yeah, no kidding. So this is the Pixel 9a, the Google Pixel 9a?
Yes. It is, yeah, being pitched as affordable, but it also has, you know, the same kind of chipset as the 9 and 9 Pro, which are more expensive. So you can do, you know, those new AI features. It's got a 6.3-inch display, which is pretty big, and it's got a bigger battery than last year's version, and we all want more battery life.
Everybody uses their phone differently, but what would you say the two or three things are that people most want from their phone?
Yeah, I think it comes down to basics. Definitely battery life, because you can't really do anything with it if you're constantly running out of juice. Decent cameras, maybe not all of the bells and whistles that, you know, the companies advertise. I think a lot of people just put it on autofocus and shoot. And, you know, just a decent sized and decent quality screen that they can stream and watch videos and play little games on.
Do people text more than talk on their phones?
It depends who you talk to. I certainly think a lot of people do. I mean, even my parents, who are in their 70s, are doing a lot of texting now. Texting is kind of like the new voicemail, you know. I just text someone and, you know, get back with them. messaging apps are super popular. You know, if you're worried about privacy, they're encrypted, but also, you know, they work cross-platform. So if you're messaging someone that's on an Android and you have an iPhone, you don't run into problems. So I think that's super popular these days too.
You know, what I've been doing lately is populating my wallet on my phone with credit cards and
stuff
like that. And I don't want to say that I'm a little late to the party, but for the first time ever, I used Apple Pay at a place, or my wallet, you know, and so I bought a sandwich and I was just going to do that thing they do. But I never know what those people are doing when they don't use a credit card or cash. And so she said, there. And I said, this is my first time ever. You need to show me what to do. She says, click that thing twice and then hold it up to the thing. And I did. And it went boop. She says, you're done. And it was like the world changed.
Yeah, it's a lot easier and it's more secure than pulling out your credit card, because instead of sending your credit card number, it sends a token, which is basically worthless to anyone that might intercept it. Also, I like that I get little notifications on my phone that basically give me a receipt and tell me how much I spent. So, you know, I may go to the grocery store, pick up a few things, and then, you know, an hour later, oh, how much did I spend? Well, it's right there. So, yeah, super handy.
Bree, just one last thing about this new Pixel phone from Google, the Pixel 9a. Okay, that all sounds good, but people tend to stay with their OS, right? So if I'm an Apple person, I'm probably not going to get this, or would you recommend that people switch over?
You know, it is tough. I have had to do this for work, where I've had to bounce back and forth between iPhone and Android when I would test out all the latest phones. It is a root canal. I'm not going to lie. That said, people do this, you know, they may switch from one to another. It is a big life choice, though, for sure.
But you're an Apple person?
I'm an Apple person. I like their take on privacy and security. And that, you know, all of my stuff now, for the most part, is Apple, my laptop, my phone, my Apple TV. Yeah. Once you get sucked into that ecosystem and everything just populates everywhere, and, you know, my whole family is on Apple, it just makes it a lot easier. And I'm sure if I had tons of Google devices and my kids were on that, I would probably be doing that. So, you know, you really end up picking one or the other.
Just one last thing here. Just give me the headline on the Amazon suit against the Consumer Product Safety Commission. What's that all about?
Yeah, they are suing the Consumer Product Safety Commission because the commission had ruled that they are legally responsible for the recalls of thousands of products that are sold through its site. And Amazon would argue that they are a third party that just kind of facilitates these sales. They're not actually selling them. So they shouldn't be held liable if something turns out to be junk or dangerous. So that's why they're suing. They stand to be liable for a lot of bad products if the CPSC gets its way.
Mostly when people get a product that's wrong via Amazon, the vendor or Amazon just says, keep it and we'll send you another, right?
Right. But the problem is if something is recalled and maybe you don't know, or you know, they aren't destroyed, and there were problems too where people were, you know, they had recalled products and, you know, they were showing that they had destroyed these or gotten rid of them and they still weren't getting refunds.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET, CNET.com. Okay, Bree, we'll talk next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Woodtrust Business Lunch. Tom Dillon is the owner of JT Medicare Solutions, JTMedicareSolutions.com. He's back in our studio today. Hi, Tom.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Last you visited with us, it was Medicare sign-up time. That window is closed, right?
The annual enrollment period every year from October 15th to December 7th.
Why do they do it that way? Why don't they let you sign up all year long?
Medicare has really, really strict rules about when you can sign up. They have a name for it called enrollment periods. And they have to have a time when they can close the door and just work on what they have instead of always signing people up.
Do you know, have there been cuts to Medicare's support services? I mean, is that challenging for people right now?
Right now, what people are most worried about, that I hear from people as they're turning 65, is the talks about cutting back on Social Security staff.
Yeah.
We have 10,000 people every single day turning 65 in the United States.
10,000 people signing up every day or eligible to.
Right. So Social Security's offices have over 120,000 calls every day. Their offices have over 200,000 visitors every day. And if you cut back on their staff by 7,000 people, and
Social Security administers Medicare?
Correct. Nobody actually works for Medicare. Everybody works for Social Security.
I see.
Social Security administer.
And then you've also heard that they are closing some offices, and they also want to close down the phone service for people.
That's correct. That's
Is
correct.
That going to happen? It hasn't yet,
It
right?
hasn't happened yet, and it does scare people. Believe it or not, you know, when you're turning 65, some of my clients are people that are writing, internet code. But some of my people don't have email addresses or smartphones. So forcing people to identify on the computer, it's not a good system. There's too many people out there.
Challenging to them. Well, what was the purpose? We don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but why would you eliminate the phone service? Why would you close down some offices?
That's not really clear other than fraud, waste, and abuse. They're just trying to cut back on what they don't understand is why are we spending so much money on this? Well, these are services that people have earned their whole life. They've contributed to Medicare since they first started working. Now we're reversing the course of that. It is time to, you know, get your Social Security, get your Medicare.
You said off the air this is the reverse of the baby boom.
That's correct.
Yeah. You explain that.
Well, in between 1945 and 1963, we had like 70 million people born in the United States. And baby boomers come through the population as a giant population. 1959, the year you were born, was the biggest year for babies ever.
Really?
Yeah, 63, 61, and 57, and in order. 59 is the first. So those people are turning 65 this year, every year. Every day in the United States, 10,000 people turn 65.
And then turn to Medicare.
That's correct.
Well, what does that mean? Because if you're 65 and you're still working, do you care about this?
You can. You don't have to. As long as you've got what's called credible coverage, you never have to sign up for Medicare. But you can sign up. Only about half the people today sign up for Medicare Parts A and B because they have coverage through their employer. It's this guy I know, John Williams. He's turning 65, and he's got great coverage through his employer. He's not going to sign up for Medicare. He's going to keep working for a while. And then when he finally retires, he can sign up for Medicare Part B and get a supplement or an Advantage plan.
I think people are worried or petrified that they won't sign up for the right thing at the right time.
I get those calls every single day.
What are some rules that we should be aware of about
huge, that? Huge rules. When you turn 65, the 3 months before you turn 65, the month of, and the 3 months after, you got a 7-month window where you can sign up for any Medicare plan that's available in your zip code. Medicare plans are given out by zip code, and nobody can ask you any healthcare questions. They're not allowed to, and you have to get the policy, and they can't charge you a nickel more than they charge anybody else. But when John Williams turned 65, he kept his employer coverage. When he's 69 and he retires and he goes to sign up for Part B in a supplement, instead of having 7 months, he's got 60 days. And if you miss that 60-day period, you won't get guaranteed coverage. They get to underwrite you, and it can wind up costing you a lot more money.
Go back to the first part of that. You said that if you do sign up within that 7-month window, they can't ask you questions about your health care.
They can't ask
you. Because we want to absolutely ensure that people will be able to get medical coverage.
The best coverage, correct.
The best coverage. Well, who's writing the policies? What policies are we talking about?
Well, Medicare has two separate parts. There's the part covered by Medicare, Part A and B. Once you sign up for A and B, you find out, usually, unfortunately, that's the first time people find out, that Medicare is an 80-20 plan. They only cover 80% of your bills. You need something that covers the other 20. I mean, sometimes a heart attack costs $1 million. And if you only had 80% coverage, you could be on the hook for another $200,000. You might have another heart attack. So the insurance companies, Blue Cross, United Healthcare, Cigna, Humana.
Those are the companies that are writing these policies.
That's correct.
Keep going.
And when you turn 65, they have to take you, no matter how sick you are,
okay,
during that 7-month window. But you only get one bite at that magic Medicare apple. After you've been on a Medicare supplement for a number of years, as they go up in price, people start to shop them. And I can find them for them. But if you have a pre-existing condition, they can hold that against you and not offer you coverage.
What about if that pre-existing condition wasn't disclosed in that first seven-month window? Do you stay hidden with that pre-existing condition? Do you ever have to disclose that you have a heart ailment?
There's this thing called an MIB. It stands for Medical Information Bureau Report. Everybody's got one. You've got one, I've got one, everybody's got one. Anytime your doctor makes a note in your file, it shows up in your MIB.
Really?
When you sign up the application for a Medicare supplement, you're giving the insurance company permission to pull your MIB.
I see.
If it says cancer, if it says COPD, if it says heart issues, and you don't have guaranteed issue, they're not going to offer you coverage. Hmm. Or maybe they will, but they'll offer it at substantially higher rates.
So if you are that first 80%, and it could be United Healthcare or Blue Cross Blue Shield, mm-hmm. right? So if I, how do I know which policy is going to be, which company, what policy is going to be better?
Well, there's standardization in the industry. And the gold standard right now is Medicare Plan G. All Medicare Plan G Medicare supplements have the same coverage. They have to cover all the holes in Medicare except for one, and they're all the same in coverage. The only difference between a Medicare policy Plan G from United Healthcare and Blue Cross Blue Shield and Cigna and Humana and Aetna, any of those companies, is how much it costs you. They each have different premiums, and they can be wildly different. There can be a $100 difference between company A and company D.
Well, if the coverage is the same but the cost is different, then do you automatically pick the lower cost one?
Surprisingly, no. So one of the things that we do is we subscribe to a service that looks at each company individually. And this is what I do with people. I send them their Medicare comparisons. And I'll show them five or six companies in their area that's accepting policies. And then I'll show them the differences between the companies. So Blue Cross Blue Shield, 70,000 people in the Chicago area. Huge company, right? There's another company only has 860-some people in it.
Employees, you mean?
No, I'm talking about people that are covered by their Medicare supplements.
70,000 versus 800. Okay, right. Keep going.
So if you're with the company that's only got 800 and they suddenly had 10 or 12 people get very sick and ran up their bills, what's going to happen to your premium if you're with that company?
I would imagine it's going to go up.
Correct.
Is that company, though, with the fewer people luring me with a lower price, though?
That's exactly what they're doing.
So even though it's a lower price, I might be more vulnerable to a price increase.
And then the next time when price goes up and we go to change you, I might not be able to get you across because of a pre-existing condition.
So do you explain that to somebody? I mean, maybe they'll take the chance that the rates will stay low. You know what I mean?
We explain that to every single person. Every single person gets an email or we print them out in person and I show them five or six different companies and we go down and we look at the profit losses or the loss ratios of the company. We want to know if they're making money or if they're losing money. Because if the insurance company is losing money, they're sure not going to lose money for long. And they're going to make that up by charging you more in premiums.
There's an insurance company that's losing money?
Yes, there's several of them.
Okay, it's 12:45. You may have a question, too. This is Tom Dillon. He's that guy whose commercials you hear sometimes. JT Medicare Solutions. And just the hook, I think, for your business, if you will, from an advertising standpoint, is that when I use your service, you don't charge me.
That's correct.
The insurance companies pay you.
That's correct.
So Blue Cross or this smaller company would compensate you.
Absolutely. And the amount that they pay me is regulated. So every insurance company that I sell for Medicare Plan G pays me the same way. Every Medicare supplement plan pays me the same way. Every Medicare Advantage plan pays me the same way.
Which is probably a good way then. You're not incentivized to steer me in a certain direction.
That's correct.
Okay. You have a question? 312-981-7200. That's Tom Dillon from JT. T as in Tom, JT Medicare Solutions, jtmedicaresolutions.com. More business news right now, though. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There's a new call to expand the Illinois sales tax. A coalition of civic and advocacy groups, including the Civic Federation and Illinois Economic Policy Institute, say the current model is insufficient. According to Cranes, the groups want the sales tax to include consumer services, a move that could generate up to $2 billion annually for the state. They say consumers are increasingly spending more of their income on services rather than goods. As a result, sales tax revenue is growing slower than public costs. Illinois is facing a nearly $3 billion shortfall, and the sales tax could generate needed funds for education, transit, and unfunded pension liabilities. Loretto Hospital in Chicago has opened a women's wellness center to address racial health care disparities in its service area. The center opened in January at the Loretto Hospital in Austin. The center provides gynecological care, preventative health, and treatment for a variety of chronic conditions affecting women. The Wellness Center will offer treatment to women from adolescence to geriatric. Loretto was founded in 1923 and services more than 33,000 patients annually. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute. Nope.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
Okay, now the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, the first day of spring, and look who's back.
Now, another exciting episode in the life of the most fantastic
tomato grower
the world has ever known.
Chicago Tomato Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
And we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com.
Hello.
Is the Chicago Tomato Man?
Yes, it is. My name is Bob Zini.
Hi, Bob. How did you become Chicago's Tomato Man?
I was always interested in gardening. I'm self-employed as a graphic designer, and I work out of my house. The isolation got kind of odd, so I tried heavy drinking.
He's kidding about that part.
My wife,
Wendy,
suggested that I start plants in the basement.
Tomato plants, heirlooms.
And the more I learned, the more I wanted to grow other varieties.
Yellow ones, green ones, purple ones, black ones. And they all have their own flavor profile, which is different from those tasteless travesties that grocery stores claim are tomatoes.
He started sharing with neighbors and friends, and
they told other people, and people wanted to buy them.
It turned into kind of like a cult.
One thing led to another, and here we are.
Yeah, the 12th year of him selling heirloom tomato plants, and he's going to have a bunch of them.
Between 13 and 15,000, 187 varieties.
You can place your order beginning right now on his website.
ChicagoTomatoMan.com.
Okay, and where do you get your seeds?
From a couple places in England, a place in Italy, France, Canada, and in the United States as well.
Bob's tomato business got too big for his basement years ago, and he now uses a greenhouse in Joliet. And once the seedlings are ready to plant, they'll be delivered at pop-ups around town during Tomato Palooza.
Tomato Palooza will be April 26th.
And if all goes well, when will your buyers be able to pick tomatoes?
On average, by mid-August.
Bob Zini,
Chicago Tomato Man!
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
From the farm to your belly, today's National Ravioli Day. You'll need some tomato sauce for that. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Got just a few more minutes with Tom Dillon, the owner of JT Medicare Solutions. He's that guy that helps you sign up for Medicare. He doesn't charge you, and he is busy these days. True?
Very, very.
Three quick questions from our listeners online. Has the $2,000 limit on the outlay for senior prescriptions that went in January been killed yet?
Not yet. Not yet. Now, that law has some, you know, dark spots to it. That $2,000 limit only applies to drugs that are covered by Medicare. So if you're taking a drug that's not covered by Medicare, the $2,000 limit doesn't apply.
I thought you have to sign up for Medicare when you turn 65, but you don't have to take it. You have to sign up when you're 60, but you don't have to take it yet if you're still working. Is there a penalty if you sign up for Medicare after your 65th birthday?
Only if you didn't have credible coverage beforehand. You never have to sign up for Medicare as long as you have other credible coverage. And you know you have credible coverage because if your coverage isn't credible, you receive a letter every January that's very tersely worded that says this is not credible coverage. So if you never got one of those, you're okay.
This is Jerry. You're on WGN. Jerry, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering what the 60-day period is. I turned 67 and I'm going to be in May, and I'm going to retire in October. I think I am anyhow. What's the 60-day period for open enrollment for me?
Your special enrollment period called losing employer coverage will begin the last day the day after your coverage from your employer ends.
And then he's got 60 days.
Now, what we'd want to do with you, Jerry, is make sure that you'd signed up for Medicare A and B 2 months before your retirement date. Make sure you've got that Part A and Part B coverage, and then would sign up for either a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medicare Supplement and a drug plan before your retirement date, so that the first day you were retired, the first day you weren't covered by your employer coverage, we'd have these new policies that would kick in for you that very day.
But you said it was 60 days after.
Right, but we can sign him up for 2 months before and then have it take place the day he loses coverage from his employer. I don't want to wait for 60 days. I don't want him to go without coverage for 60 days. I wanted to get him that coverage that very first day.
And then that scenario we described, you've got 60 days to sign up. In that 60-day interim, you don't have any insurance then?
Yeah, that's crazy. That's why we do it the other way.
Yeah, right. Is there any way to lock in my costs permanently? No, it renews every year, right?
Unfortunately, no. Medicare Part B premiums go up every year. Medicare supplements go
up. How much have they gone up?
Medicare Part B 10 years ago was $104, and now it's $185.
You said off the air 19% and 40% for some age groups?
There's a very, very big insurance company here in the Chicago area, and across the board for their Medicare supplements, they had 19% increases. And if you were over age 80, they started to increase your cost by 40% this year.
What last thing do you want to say?
I've been blessed by falling into this industry that I never wanted to have anything to do with. I never wanted to be in Medicare. I get to help people through something that creates a lot of stress and anxiety. I get to help them through something that's really important. It's their health care. And I get to do it, and somebody else pays me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not me.
No,
it's not your client. It's the insurance
company. The insurance companies, yes. It's the best gig I've ever not wanted, and really feel blessed to have been put into.
And that's JT Medicare Solutions. So Tom Dillon is in our studio. His business is JT Medicare Solutions. If you want him to help you, I'm sorry we don't have time for all our calls and texts, jtmedicaresolutions.com. Okay, Tom.
Thank you, John.